College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
We waited all week. It's Friday. Thank goodness it's Friday. Party in Tuscaloosa right now. David Pollock
Friday,
joining us.
You ain't got no job. Yeah. And you ain't got nothing to do with football.
There are a lot of people doing that, just thinking about football, tailgating in that environment in Alabama, getting ready for LSU, Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Best weekend of the college football schedule so far. We've been waiting. It feels like we've been waiting for at least 2 months for this matchup, and we will get to that pick later on. But first off, I got to call you out. You called it with the Georgia pick. Much credit to you here
on the podcast, right?
But then,
but,
you know,
there's always a caveat coming.
Well, yeah. Because here on the podcast on Friday, you picked SMU.
Yeah.
And then I've seen you do this twice now, where you make a pick on Friday, you oppose me, and then you go on game day, and then you switch the pick, and now suddenly you're in alignment with me. So we don't count, we don't count the Memphis pick on Saturday that you made. We count the pick that you made on Friday with us here on the podcast.
Okay, that's fine. I'm still beating you regardless.
No,
so
you're
it really
not.
Doesn't
matter. No,
yes,
you're
I
not.
Am. Oh,
no.
On the season, 100%. We'll check the tape. No, so we'll slap you.
Taylor will be behind all that because when it comes to math, I don't trust you.
That's fair point. But no, the biggest thing with me with SMU was Robertson and his ability to play. If he couldn't play, and from what I heard when I was on campus, we knew that he wasn't going to play.
Yeah.
And as soon as I knew that for SMU, it was a game changer because he had 250 versus Temple. I mean, the guy averaged 31 yards a catch versus Temple and TCU. You know, like that's the guy, the big playmaker. So losing him, I had to switch it up with, go with Gainwell in Memphis and I was right. So
Taylor,
it was good to be
did
right.
You see what he did? He set me up just so he could smash Temple in his pen. Like, you know, that's the whole point of his conversation here in this.
31 yards a catch.
Yeah. By the way, how was Memphis? The scene looked amazing, Beale Street.
It was unreal, dude. It was crazy. It was very Nashville-esque from when we did the show, or Fargo-esque, you know, just to being in a city. And I think campuses should be alert to that whenever we come to town. Instead of putting us sometimes on campus, put us right in the middle of downtown. Like, you know, where you can have a lot of students that are close by, but also have a cool scene and things around to do. And it was awesome. It was an awesome
Make
scene.
It a party, right? And
the whole
community can come out. It felt like all of the Memphis was out Saturday morning. Let's hope we get the same vibe in Tuscaloosa. I think we will. I think we will get
really?
A similar vibe tomorrow morning. You don't
really?
Think so?
I don't know. I think Alabama's, they've been there, done that, Kevin. They've kind of like, hey, this is what we do. We're kind of the king here. Okay. Last week it was the king in Memphis it was Elvis. Now we're with the king, you know, in Tuscaloosa. So I don't know. It's just, you know what? That's the thing, that the declining attendance in college football has been an issue, and they're trying to get that resolved and figured out. And no one's been more outspoken than Nick Saban. So we'll see. How about that? We'll reserve judgment and we'll see. We'll see if they show up and show out.
Okay. Then you know what? This is a message to all the tailgaters, because they'll be sitting there in the parking lot. Just rest the food and then go to the scene behind.
No. Bring the food
hours.
To me.
Bring the
boiled peanuts.
Why? You won't
and the
eat
veggies
it.
And the fruits.
You're not
going to
eat it.
Stuff.
You're not going to eat. You're not eating what they're eating at tailgates. No one's bringing veggies to tailgates.
Some people bring the carrots and celery. Come on now.
Yeah,
that's usually what I eat at tailgates.
For decoration, not to eat. No one's consuming a carrot at a tailgate.
Bring me some boiled peanuts, whoever's listening.
All right. So before we get to our picks, also, I can't forget this. Big weekend for you, head coach of the 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds. How are we feeling for that?
Y'all want a little day in the life of
yes.
me? And how many problems I have. So last night we have a full practice. By the way, we drew up the cards. And so we had all of their top 10, 15 plays, the best 15 plays that I'm most worried about. And we ran scout team for 40 minutes. So our offense for both age groups would run, you know, offense for the defense. And we would go through, where am I putting my eyes? What's my key here? What do I need to make sure I'm focusing in on? And so we were locked and loaded. And I got up this morning after last night's practice, and it was 5 a.m. this morning, literally, Kevin, and I'm rolling around in bed, and I got up and got on the grease board. And I literally had a few more thoughts of a couple different ways that we could attack and have success. So I'm very, 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 very thankful that youth league football will be over on Sunday. I'm tired of thinking about it for hours upon hours in a day and waking up at 5 and going to bed late. I'm ready to get the chip and fade off into the sunset. So we're excited about it.
Do you feel like other coaches in the league put in this much time that you do?
No, because they're smart and they have a life. I mean, that's just no. I mean, I just I've always been the type of personality, man. I'm just too obsessive and compulsive, and if I'm going to do it, I have to do it right, and it doesn't matter how long it takes. And so, you know, and listen, I got a great staff and a bunch of buddies that are texting with me at the same time, so they got as many problems as I do too. But we're dealing with it. We got a few issues we got to assess. And offensively, offensively, the biggest key, Kevin, we have to be able to attack and make them go to no safety. Cause if they stay in single high safety, we'll make sure we get them out of it with our throwing game, with our perimeter game. And then once they go no safety, we've got a couple wrinkles that'll put the game away.
Coach Saban, thank you for the breakdown heading into Saturday's game. Wish you the best of luck. And side note, I told Herbie this on Monday. I had lost my voice on Sunday because I was losing my mind when my 7-year-old took a pick six to the house in his flag football game.
Let's go!
To close out his season.
That's what I'm talking about.
And they've got the championship playoffs all played out on Sunday as well, this coming Sunday.
But he's got good hands?
He's got really, his nickname's Pick Six. He's got 3 picks on the season. Like,
dang.
And he's a ball tracker. Like, he knows where it is. You've given me inspiration, so I think sometime in the summer, I'm just going to send my kid down to your house for a week, and you just go to the grease board with them and you break things down. All right. That's a deal.
You're going to have to be the head coach and I'll work with you on scheme and help you implement an offense and stuff.
I'd love to do that. But the thing is, I'm not available on weeknights for practice because I got to do Sports Center. I got another gig, man.
That really sucks.
Yeah. Speaking of work, we're lucky that our work is on this podcast is picking games on Friday. Let's start out the gate here with, the biggest showdown in the Big Ten. And that is Penn State undefeated and now in your top 4 at Minnesota. And I think if this was not Tuscaloosa weekend, game day would have been in Minnesota for this matchup.
Oh, there's no doubt.
In this and what's going to be the difference?
And by the way, it would be an awesome scene.
Oh gosh, yeah.
It would have been so cool to go to Minnesota.
You were talking about, and you brought this up. You were talking about, a city to come out. The entire state would have been out there.
Yeah. It would have been
for game day.
It would have been a lot of fun. I'm like the rest of the world and like you, cause I know you're not going to pick an upset. I'm going Penn State. I think they will take care of business. I think KJ Hamler is just that dude, man. He finds a way to, and he's not going to get statistical. He's not going to be the nightmare of getting 100 yards a game. He should have 100 yards a game because he's that kind of talent, but their passing game's not there. They actually don't run the ball. You know, they don't have a great back that they feature yet. They have a bunch of guys that can carry the rock, but that defensive front 7 to me is just, it's just dirty. And everybody they play, they're going to be physical against. And I think Minnesota are going to have trouble blocking those guys up front.
Penn State's favored by 7 in a game like this. I'm with you. I'm picking Penn State. I actually think they'll cover.
Hey, bonus pick.
Yeah. And I think that environment's going to be fantastic. Can't wait.
It'll be awesome.
All right. Let's go to the Big 12. And no respect for Baylor, number 12 in the rankings, undefeated at TCU. And I circled this game just because, you know, TCU, they basically destroyed Texas this season a couple weeks ago.
Come on, pull the trigger. You got it. Who you going with, TCU?
The line here is -2, Baylor.
That's telling you something that I've learned from working with you. That's telling you something, right?
That is telling you something.
Okay, you buy him?
No, because again, and listen, like we discussed this too, that Baylor game against West Virginia. My goodness, I'm watching it as it plays out. You're like, oh boy, West Virginia may just pull off the shocker here, and that would destroy a lot of things in the Big 12. But I'm going with Baylor. I think Baylor's going to be undefeated.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, if it's only 2 points, you know, listen, I trust without a shadow of a doubt, Baylor's defense. I think it's the best in the Big 12. I think they show up every single week. Mr. Lynch, you watch 93, is an animal. They got dudes. Roy's in the middle. Lockhart. They've got a really good defensive line, and they got a bunch of guys that play super, super hard. I'm a big fan of Baylor's defense. And listen, I think it's kind of a mixed bag with TCU at quarterback. Max Duggan left the game, and then backup QB gets hurt. By the way, 2 guys transferred this week. I mean, they've had – it hadn't been the most successful position at the in the world. So it's going to be interesting to watch their offense with TCU. And I don't think Baylor's offense is anything to write home about consistently. They have moments of big plays, but I'll take Baylor just because I know their defense will show up.
It feels like, you know, a 24-21 game where Baylor's playing their style and you have to play to their style, and then they'll find a way to beat you on a field goal, right? I mean.
Yeah, just muck it up.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we're going to stay in the Big 12. Kansas State at Texas.
Who you got?
Man, Texas favored by 7. This game's in Austin. And I know a lot of people are feeling really good about Kansas State and Skylar Thompson. He's done a phenomenal job at quarterback.
Here comes Butt.
I actually think I'm going to go with Kansas State.
No way.
Yes, I think so.
I'm proud. I feel like a proud dad, man. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, watch you pick Texas.
Absolutely taking Texas. 100% taking Texas. I'm with you. I 1000% love Kansas State, and I like their creativity in the run game, and I like who they are and what they are. But I think Texas back getting healthy. And what do we say early in the season when we were riding with Texas in all these different games? Well, you know, Kansas might put up 100, but you know, Sam Ellinger is going to put up 104. And the TCU game, he finally had, you know, 4 picks, I think, and really killed them. But I think everybody getting healthy. I think obviously all the players they have that have come back are starting to come back and get healthy now. I think that's the difference. And Texas finds a way to get the dub at home. If they were playing in the Little Apple, then, you know, you had no shot in Little Apple. I mean, come on. But at home, Texas gets a dub in a close high scoring game.
I mean, Texas gave up 48 points to Kansas last month at home.
With 14,000 guys on the IR several have come back. So that'll be helpful maybe.
Okay. We're going to stay in the Big 12. Okay. Iowa State at Oklahoma.
I really wish I had the, I don't know what I can say on air, to pull the trigger and go with Iowa State, but I don't. I will go Oklahoma. But I do think that Iowa State can score. I think that Oklahoma's defense proved they were a little suspect, but I just, and listen, we've also seen this three safety look and Iowa State confuse and have moments against Oklahoma in the past. And when I look at Jalen Hurts, I still think, you know, if he doesn't have that running game going, it's definitely an issue for him, and he can create it with himself, by the way, and he can do it, you know, with his backs and stuff too. But I just, after coming off a loss, Oklahoma a little bit more irritated. Iowa State will play them really, really well, but I'll take Oklahoma.
I'm with you. I'll take Oklahoma, that line.
Yeah, I bet you think it's going to be pretty close though, right?
No.
Are you taking the point? You think it's a beat down?
I don't know if it's a beat down. I mean, they're laying 14 and a half points. I'd take Oklahoma laying the points.
Really?
Like this, yeah.
I would go the other way. I would take Iowa State
in the points.
Yeah, I would take the points just because I don't think they're going to stop Purdy. I think Purdy's got some good magic. Brock Purdy, if you haven't watched him, he's really good, man.
Yeah, he is really, really good. All right, let's continue here. Missouri at Georgia. And I know how much you love Mizzou at the beginning
the
of the season.
Mizzou Tigers, baby.
And we predicted this. You predicted this at the beginning of the season that Missouri would be coming into this game at 8-0. They're 5-3. How do you
fresh
like
fresh off them? Of losses to Kentucky and Vanderbilt,
Yeah. Every time we talk about Missouri, they lose.
That's true, by the way, because they went on a good run there for like 5 weeks because we didn't talk about them after the Wyoming debacle.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden they get hot. And then you bring it up and I'm like, yeah, Missouri's playing well. Kelly Bryant's spreading it to receivers all over the place. A lot of receivers that can catch and make plays. And then
they lose to Vandy.
14 to Vandy and set. They've scored 21 points in the last 2 games, I think. So wheels falling off. They got to go to Athens to play against that defense that, listen, defense shows up every single week. I will be curious to see, by the way, good Missouri defensive front. Jake Fromm can continue to play well and that offense can continue to play well, but I'm taking the dogs just like everybody else.
I'm with you. I'll take the dogs here too. Yeah. All right. You were high on them on our Wednesday podcast, that unit on offense, and that is Wake Forest 7-1 at Virginia Tech. That's a 2.5 point line too. Wake.
Oh, favored. Really?
Yeah.
Wake is favored?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm taking Wake. I mean, I wasn't high on these dudes for no reason. Give me Newman. Hey, Newman.
Yeah.
Give me Newman and his ability to run and throw. I think when you look at Virginia Tech, they're going to play Hooker. They're going to play a lot of quarterbacks probably. I mean, depending on who's healthy and they're going to rotate and honest to God, they're better runners right now at their stage than they are throwers. I mean, I think that's the truth of what this Virginia Tech offense is. Now, listen, I do think the Virginia Tech offense is better with a running quarterback, and they've kind of showed that. Don't you agree? I mean, I think it looks better, but Patterson got the nod last week, and whether it's him or Hooker, both of them better runners than throwers. By the way, that Notre Dame game it shouldn't have been near that close. I mean, Notre Dame dominated them statistically and should have won the game by more, but Virginia Tech about snuck up and won that
thing. Well, when you have a 98-yard, you know, scoop and score, that's the big difference, right? That tilts the way the momentum is going, because Notre Dame's to score, and then boom, you just take away six, and then you add six on the other side. The swing change.
I mean, you're talking about 200-something yards of offense to 450-ish. It was literally double, but guess what? Notre Dame turned it over more. Notre Dame had more penalties. Notre Dame had, you know, those mistakes added up, and you see it's hard to overcome those. But
how about the statement that Brian Kelly said too? Like, Ian Book, you know, 2-minute drive, you score. I think Brian Kelly said this week that was the first time all season in the 2-minute drill with Ian Book as the quarterback, even in practice, that Notre Dame had scored. How about that? When I heard that,
I don't know that I would say that out loud.
Exactly. I was like, well, why are you admitting that? That's not a good thing. That doesn't help your quarterback.
Jeez, that's kind of. And he didn't do it with, by the way, he didn't do it with his arm. He did it with his leg.
That's kind of scary. Yeah, exactly.
But no, I remember he had a 2-minute drive. Well, remember he did. It was more of a 4-minute situation. Actually, it was later than that against Georgia. They go down the field, they score, get the ball back, and have the ball in Georgia territory with a chance to have a chance to tie the game. That's crazy. I don't think I would have said that about
the
quarterback.
No, especially when you're bringing it up in practice too. Like, what are you doing? You're not helping your quarterback in that situation.
How does that build confidence?
I have no idea. It was one of those comments when I saw it, I was like, what? Why are you saying this?
Yeah. BK's been known to throw some things around that are interesting.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. This is a good matchup. Iowa at Wisconsin.
Oh God. You tell me you're going Iowa,
no
baby.
Way.
You will never pick Iowa again the rest of your life, will you?
I'm not picking this, Iowa this week. I can tell you that against that defense.
Against the team that's kind of been ticked off a little bit too with Wisconsin probably, which is probably a good thing, but they're not playing Ohio State. So it's a good news. I think that offense that was humming a little bit and had things rolling a little bit will all of a sudden, will get back on track for Wisconsin a little bit more, and they'll score. This will look more like the games we saw before that. Remember Michigan State and, 38-0. And then it was before that, it was like 48-0. They went on a couple game run where they were doing really well. I think too much offense, more importantly, way too much defense for Wisconsin.
I'm with you. So we're in alignment here. It's aside from one game, Kansas State, Texas. So let's get to the biggest game, the game everybody's circled, LSU at Alabama.
You go first.
Okay. I got to tell you that I was feeling LSU for the last 3 weeks.
Okay.
And
what changed?
I'm not saying it's a difference maker, but the injury, not injury, but the loss of Divinity in the middle.
Yeah.
When you need as many playmakers on defense against this Bama offense plays a huge role. Tuscaloosa plays a huge role. The return of Tua plays a huge role. So I'm going Alabama.
Close?
There's no way I would take Alabama laying the points. Where the line that we're looking at right now?
That's your job, by the way. You're the line guy.
Let's see. Yeah, 6.5 points, and you know he's a game time decision. Tua is the difference in this game.
But you're not worried about the ankle at all.
No, of course I'm worried about the ankle. Okay. But I've got to go with Alabama, especially when you look at the wide receiver play and Najee Harris. And the idea that you're just going to do quick dump offs. And if you could do that, the screen game, I think that plays a role. That's why I pick Alabama.
All right. I'll be the first to tell you I've gone back and forth. I've thought about this game way too much. I'm still not decided yet, by the way.
Oh, is this one of those you're going to tell us one thing and then on game day you go somewhere else and then you're like, I didn't really lose, Kevin.
It could happen, but,
you're despicable
for the time being. I will go LSU. And I think that LSU can really, first of all, where they do the best damage is the middle of the field. and they can absolutely death by a thousand cut you and wear you out. And Alabama could, I think, could be in a situation they were against Clemson a couple years ago when they ran so many plays and they just got exhausted and they couldn't answer the bell. I can see that happen. And I just don't know what I don't know. And what I'm saying to that is Tua's health, it's got to be one little tackle from being in pain. You know, it's got to be one hit to the lower midsection to rattle him a little bit. And just, you know, if both are healthy, I might think otherwise, because Alabama's not death by a thousand cuts. It's death by a thousand bombs. I mean, it's just bombs away and can score so quickly. But I just, you know, LSU having a magical year, so little success against Alabama. And it's just time. It has to happen at some point. So maybe it's time for LSU, and LSU kicks a field goal late and wins the ball game.
Later in the podcast, we're going to have Brad Edwards on with us and kind of get his perspective of the playoff rankings, as well as the breakdown and the difference of this game with Alabama LSU. I'm going to ask him a specific question that I'm going to direct to you as well, that I've asked actually to Heather. I asked to Herbie on SportsCenter.
If
Alabama were to lose this game and LSU wins, is Alabama out of the playoff conversation?
Give me the context in which they lost.
Let's see. LSU wins by a touchdown. But the game is close, but LSU wins by a touchdown.
I think the only way is what the committee said initially when they started the committee to begin with. First of all, Alabama's eye test is what's keeping him in it. It's not the schedule. And they still have opportunity with Auburn, but, you know, not much more. If LSU beat them, they would not be playing in the SEC championship game. So that's another opportunity that's lost with losing to LSU. I don't think they have enough on the resume. The only way they could get pulled out of the fire to me would be Tua wasn't healthy. And that was part of the curriculum when the committee formed. And that's the only way I see it happening. But I would say that it would be a very, very finite chance, a small chance. And that would be the ace in the hole if it could happen. But the resume is not strong, Kevin. I mean, it's just not. There's not enough on there to make you go, man, they deserve it. And you know what though? Think about a couple of years ago. Was it 17? They lost to Alabama, or they lost to Auburn, and didn't even win their division and went into the college football playoffs. So, and won the thing, by the way. So, you know, it can happen and they could still be alive. Non-conference, they just haven't done a lot. And I don't think this is the same Bama defense that we've seen for years that you believed in and you said, wow, that team's shockingly great on both sides of the football. And so I would say it would be just a slither of on the back of maybe because Tua's injury was a part of the loss.
When will you know, as a defensive player, when will you know about Tua's ankle in the game? But what do you need to see on that opening drive to make you think, yeah, he's good, or he's not moving. There's something wrong.
I think he'll be able to move just fine. To me, it's going to be when he gets hit for the first time, or he gets wrapped up for the first time. Because you know how, when you get wrapped up down low, like the Tennessee game when he got hurt, that's when you see the ankle get twisted a little bit. Now, I'm a defensive guy, so if I got you, I'd twist it a little bit more too. But you know, you just try to see the hit and when he gets tackled and how does that feel. Last year, he responded really well when you saw in the Oklahoma game, and then Clemson was a lot better and they just destroyed him. But I thought he looked somewhat healthy. So I think right away you'll know, but after that first hit, that first wrap up will be a sign if Tua is good to go.
All right, defensively then, are you blitzing? What are you doing against Tua to test them and make sure he gets hit?
Well, first of all, if you say you're just going to come after him, then you're going to lose.
Of course, of course. Yeah,
you got to be able to change it up, mix it up. I know one thing: if the corners that I have, it'll be a very interesting chess match. Who's on who, and where they decide to? Because if I'm LSU, I would love to take away those RPO slants, and I would want my best corner in the slots. I just would. I would want to make sure Stingley Jr.'s in the slot playing man, Fulton's in the slot playing man, and now I'm at the best possible spot. The hardest throws are out wide. Let's see if Tua's ankle's healthy enough to attack me, and I just got to take away those RPO. Here's another thing too. LSU's pressure. Like you mentioned it without Divinity. I mean, that's a big deal. You know, who's the guy that's going to get after the quarterback? Is Chase on? Can he get there? Can he get home? Can he hit Tua? Those are the, question marks that you're going to have going to the game. And that's why, you know, you'd probably feel more comfortable picking Alabama. I mean, they have less flaws defensively because I think they have a guy in Lewis that can rush the pass, or they have a guy in Jennings that's a little bit more proven. But, you know, at some point this has to snap, right? Like at some point LSU has to win this game, right? Like they can't lose forever, right? Well, they have to at some point win.
If they don't win this, I'm not sure if they'll ever win again, right?
Then win. Exactly.
Like, so Taylor, you got this, right? You got this on record that he's picking LSU.
Picking LSU until Saturday, correct?
We'll see how that changes in the Tuscaloosa crowd on Saturday morning. Pollock, enjoy it for us, man. Enjoy the carrots and all the vegetables you're going to get at the tailgate in Tuscaloosa.
Boiled peanuts. Somebody bring me some boiled peanuts and I'll love you forever.
Throw it at him with a bag. Let's see how that plays.
Peg me in the head. I'm good with that. I promise I'll still eat him and smile.
Have fun, buddy.
See you, bub.
We'll be back in a minute with college football insider Brad Edwards and his thoughts on Bama, LSU, and how the BCS would look right now. But first, a word from Allstate, AT&T, and Goodyear. Because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today.
Yeah, college football is great unless, of course, it's just okay. Like when students decide to paint their chests with different letters to spell some word, and then they stand together to get on TV, but they're spelling the word wrong, or they lined up in the wrong order. Sure, not everybody's an English major, and I get it. We can't all win the national spelling bee. But come on, people. You should know how to spell Wildcats or Bulldogs. The purpose isn't to have a word jumble in the student section to keep your mind sharp or something. Just okay is not okay, whether it's college football fans or your wireless network. You want to watch the best college football just like you want to go with AT&T, America's best network. Don't settle for typos on people's chests, and don't settle for anything less than the best wireless network. Get the best college football and get AT&T. Best network based on GWS One Score, September 2019.
Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven.
And it's great to have college football insider Brad Edwards here with us. So, Brad, you've had some time to process things. What did you learn on Tuesday night from the committee?
I learned that, at least for now, the eye test seems to be important to this committee. And we got to remember, there's turnover every year. Three or four new people come onto it. So you can't go back 4 years and say, okay, in 2015, the committee did this, so we've got to assume that they'll do the same thing. No, it's a completely different set of 13 people. So each year, I think it matters what do they do week to week, and what kind of tendencies are they showing you, which directions are they leaning on certain things. And to me, if you just look at the top four, the justification for putting Ohio State over LSU is eye test. Ohio State looks like the best team in the country. Okay, they've played two good teams. They didn't just beat them. They blew them out. Okay, then you look at 3 and 4, the justification for Alabama over Penn State. Penn State's got two wins that are much better than anything Alabama has, but Alabama has looked better. They've looked more dominant against the teams they've played. And so if that's the case, moving forward, I think that maybe it's good news for the losers of the Alabama LSU and Ohio State Penn State games, because I think the eye test is going to have them looking better than, let's say, a one-loss Pac-12 champ. A one-loss Big 12 champ, I think, is still TBD. If Oklahoma were to just put the foot down on the pedal and just blow through people the rest of the season, if they were to go back to playing defense the way they did before they met Kansas State, I think they could pass the eye test too. But some of those other teams, I think it's pretty clear. If you're just simply asking the question, who's better, that's going to favor these SEC and Big Ten
teams. Okay, then you mentioned it the way, like, this eye test here for Oklahoma. The committee didn't think too much of Baylor, though, you know, being undefeated at 12.
Right? They don't pass the eye test.
The eye test. Yeah. So does that hurt? I mean, that the Big 12 is really hurting Oklahoma right now.
Yeah, you could say that. Although, I mean, Kansas State ranked where they are. It makes Oklahoma's loss look better than some teams like Georgia's, for example. You know, they've got an opportunity, maybe, if Oklahoma State can keep it up, to have a quality win after Baylor. I mean, Baylor's not the only one left on their schedule that's ranked, so they have those things going for them. I think, though, that there is this element that we can't ever forget, which is that we're human, they're human. We're affected by things as much as we try to be unbiased, as much as they want to hang their hats before, you know, at the doorway before they go in. When you look at something like the potential for an Oklahoma-Baylor Big 12 championship game, I just have to believe, as a committee member, just like the rest of us, you are not as blown away by Oklahoma beating Baylor. That's not as big of a statement to you as it was, like, say, last year when they beat Texas.
Yeah, and Texas's season this year has really hurt the entire conference.
The perception of everything. And let's not forget about LSU.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that LSU would be number one if Texas had managed to have one fewer loss and be in the top 25 right now. But certainly we've made a lot of assumptions about, you know, LSU, they'll be fine. If they lose to Alabama, you know, they've got the resume. Well, they do have a win cross division in the SEC against Florida that looks really good. But that Texas win, that might not be worth a whole lot. Now, the committee obviously will have discussions about injuries. Texas was very banged up at running back when they played LSU. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the other injuries that they're dealing with right now, they weren't in dire straits then the way they are now. So this Texas team is not as good as the one that played LSU because of injuries.
Yeah.
Will the committee consider that? They should. Can we be certain that they will? I don't know.
Especially the performance against TCU, where they're banged up in the secondary here. And you mentioned injuries. So let's just play devil's advocate here in Saturday's game. And if you're going with the human eye test here, if Tua is not, let's just say not 80%, or if Tua goes down and Bama loses a close game, how does that now shake up things for Bama?
Yeah, I think the close game part of it is very important, because we've obviously seen the last few years examples of teams losing games by large margins, and that really does have an impact on the committee. As much as I say it's not the same group week, you know, year after year, that's been a constant in the last few years, is that you lose by a lopsided score. There's only so much excusing that they can do for it. But if that's the case, and I think this is something that's very frustrating to a lot of fans, they have a lot of cards they can play on the committee,
yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, they can say eye test, they can go with resume, and then the injury card. And it is possible if Alabama plays a close game, but they lose, and Tua is clearly not 100%. He's out there limping around, or like you said, he doesn't even finish the game. And then he comes back, and they blow out everybody down the stretch. They win at Auburn. It is within the rights of the selection committee to say, hey, we don't care how many wins they have against our top 20, our top 25. We don't care about some of the other stuff out there that this team or that team might have that looks better than Alabama. At the end of the day, Alabama at full strength, which we expect them to be for the playoff, is just better. They're one of the four best teams. End of story. They can say that, and everyone will want to pull their hair out, mm-hmm. but we've seen it before. They can do that, and I don't think you can discount the possibility that they would do it again, even if the Alabama resume doesn't seem to stack up.
Does this feel like, and we've heard Feinbaum talk a little bit about it, and Herbie talked a little bit about it on Tuesday, before the release of the rankings. Does this feel like it's a must-win game for Alabama Saturday, considering they're at home and they're favored by a touchdown?
Well, let me just go back to 2011, okay, when they played each other, basically
game of
the
century,
same scenario, yep. Okay? And we felt like at that point that the loser was out, especially if it was Alabama because they were at home. And after that game, stuff happened. You know, other teams lost. Alabama worked its way back in. A lot of people obviously thought Oklahoma State should have gotten a chance instead of Alabama getting a second chance, but they got it. And now that we have a four-team format, you know, there are more spaces for a loser to get into. I don't think it's remotely out of the question. And as we've talked about, if the committee is consistent with this eye test being more important than resume, even if Tua plays the whole way, and let's say they lose 48-45, it's just, you know, just a shootout, LSU comes out on top. If Oklahoma were to lose one more game, and at the end it is Alabama against, let's say, a one-loss Penn State and a one-loss Pac-12 champion, depending on what Penn State does the rest of the way, because I think their resume would be better than Alabama's. And maybe they get blown out by Ohio State. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, the committee could very easily look at Alabama, even with Tua being healthy in the loss to LSU, and say, they're just better. You know, so, I mean, I keep coming back to this, but I think it's very important that if that was the signal that they were, look, that's what we took from it. But if that was a legitimate signal they were sending, is that they value the eye test more than the resume, Alabama's pretty good shape.
Okay, we can go in circles too with scenarios, right? But I do want to play one scenario out, and that is in the Big Ten here with Penn State you bring up. Hypothetically, let's just say Penn State blows the doors out of Minnesota, right?
Yep.
On the road against a team that not getting a lot of respect from the committee, but still that was undefeated, yeah. Right? And then they play a close one against Ohio State, but Ohio State wins, and then Ohio State, you know, plays a close one against Minnesota in the Big Ten championship. Could you see a scenario where a one-loss Penn State gets in, considering what they did against Minnesota and how they played against Ohio State, if we're talking about these tangibles here?
Absolutely. And to me, if Ohio State, if they keep playing the way they've been playing, and let's say Penn State's the only team that gives them a game, I have a hard time at that point coming up, even if let's say LSU loses a close game in Tuscaloosa. We know LSU's resume is good, but the way that the Buckeyes are playing right now, I mean, this is next level. Like, I don't know if you saw, I tweeted this out last week, Kevin, with our FPI, and I know some people don't care for FPI mm-hmm. and all that, but what FPI does is that it rates teams based on how many points above or below an average FBS team they're perceived to be. Ohio State last week when I tweeted out was 33.6 points better than an average FBS team. In the bye week, they actually went up to 33.8 because of the team's
yes.
or average became a little bit
lower.
Worse. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they are only the fourth team in the 15 years that we've had this that has gotten above 33. The other three are 2005 Texas, 2005 USC, and 2013 Florida State. This is rarefied air. The level at which they are dominating, none of Saban's teams at Alabama ever reached this level of dominance.
Wow.
Okay, so if they keep playing like that and one team plays them close and that's that team's only loss, I'm sold. I don't know if the committee would be, but at that point, I would be convinced that Penn State deserved to be in there.
And keep in mind, that game is in Columbus, too. So the environment, if Penn State were to make it close...
Oh, absolutely.
Then you
yeah.
have a big case right here, right? And again, that is the human eye test here. The opposite of the eye test, and you've experienced it, and you're my expert if I ever go back to looking at the BCS. How would the BCS look at today's rankings?
This is a tricky question to answer. And every year when the final playoff standings come out, we get our semifinalists and all that. I always go back and I plug in the numbers and I said, this is what the BCS formula would have spit out. And by the way, each of the 5 years so far, it has been the same four teams. Maybe not the same order, but it's the same four that
really?
The BCS formula would have given. But I think there's some bias built into that. And that's what I'm about to give you here. that makes it so difficult to go back and say this is what the BCS would have done, which is that I think there's very clear evidence that the voters in the polls have adjusted their way of thinking to what the selection committee does. They have been influenced by the selection committee. When this first started, we were all asking the question, okay, how much is the selection committee going to be influenced by these polls that have already been out there for 8 weeks, 9 weeks before they start voting? It's gone the other way. The polls have been influenced by the committee. And what you've seen is this mindset that voters in the polls have that's different from what they had before, where I think they're now more interested in resume. They're more interested in quality wins than they were before. I think a lot of people previously used to just, who do I think are the best teams in what order? And that's the way they would rank them. And so I look at two things right now that I do not think either would have happened prior to the playoff in the AP poll. One is LSU being number one instead of Ohio State. I mean, Ohio State has just been that good that I think in most years, it would have been a no-brainer. The Buckeyes are the number one team. But people are looking, oh, LSU's got to win over this team and that team. And then look where they're ranked. Like, we got to put them up there because of the resume. And they've been, I mean, outside of the three top 10-ish type teams, at least top 10 at the time of the game, they've dominated everyone else. But those games were all close. Ohio State's played two games, as we said before, against teams that at least the committee has ranked top 20 right now, and neither one was close. So, and then the other one I would point to would be Clemson. Prior to the playoff, prior to the selection committee, there is no way that an undefeated national champion, defending national champion, would have fallen from number one, maybe to two, if someone else was just flat out looking better.
Yep.
But not all the way to four
especially
or five.
Especially with the quarterback like still coming back and the running back still back.
Yeah, I mean, with
back.
All the pieces from last year. And so I think the way that those teams are ranked this week, that tells you all you need to know about how the polls have changed. And so I think it's kind of pointless to go back. I'll still do it at the end of the year just for
yeah,
fun.
I like
but it's
it.
Pointless to go back kind of week after week and say, okay, what would the BCS have done? Because we have no idea how they would have voted if they had never been exposed to the selection committee's way of thinking.
I actually enjoy the exercise just because, you know, it's like, oh yeah, let's just see. Because again, it's no longer an experiment, the playoff, right?
Right.
But still, let's go back to what it was like before and let's just see how it plays out. It is interesting though that they've had the same four teams, not maybe the same order, but same four teams since the playoff came about.
And to that point, as far as just comparing the playoff era to the BCS, to me, I was at that LSU Alabama game in 2011. And this feels very different. That game felt like going in, it was for all the marbles. That was the national championship game because you felt like the winner was going to end up in the BCS championship. The loser was out and the winner was going to play someone not as good as the team they had just beaten. Now we have no way of knowing whether if Oklahoma State had gotten their chance, what would have happened, but that was the feeling then. This one feels different, and not just because it's now 2-3 by the selection committee. I don't think that takes much away from the game, but it's simply that, okay, even though, yes, it happened anyway in 2011, which is the loser got back into it, we know that's a very real possibility today because there are four teams, there are four spots, and so the loser's not out of it. That much is clear. And then the other thing is that there are at least two other teams with Ohio State and Clemson that are playing at a level right now where they could easily beat Alabama or LSU on a given day. And so there's nothing foregone about the winner of this game is going to end up being the national champion. Winner of this game's got a really good chance to be in the playoff, but they're not even a gimme to win the semifinal game. And so as much fun as it is to get ready for Alabama LSU 2019, there are a few reasons it doesn't feel as big. And I don't think it is as big as it was in 2011.
Saturday's game in Tuscaloosa will come down to what?
I think we have to look at this the way that we've looked at many of these Big 12 shootouts in recent years. You know, I know SEC
so
people
wild.
Cringe. Now look, the defensive players in this game, I mean, there are a bunch of guys on defense for both teams that are going to play in the NFL.
Yeah.
And several first round picks on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not comparing these defenses to the typical Big 12 defenses in recent years. But I think it has a similar feel to it in that I don't know that either defense is equipped to stop the offense that they're facing. And so I think it very well could be high scoring. And so you look at it from that Big 12 perspective, which is what are you wanting to do? It is keep the other team out of the end zone however it happens. This is not about three and outs. This is about a sack fumble. It's about getting an interception. It's about holding them to a field goal attempt. And of course, with Alabama, even a 35 yarder is no gimme. I mean, they're going to miss that half the time anyway. I mean, that's so I think that's where you get the wins. And so you start looking at, okay, how do you achieve those things? And there's some things I mentioned what's in LSU's favor, which is Alabama's kicking is it was in 2011. And it still is awful today.
It's
not dependable.
It's incredible.
Okay, so if you're LSU, you feel really good about holding Alabama to field goal attempts. But on the Alabama side, you know, I can look at pressure on the quarterback. Terrell Lewis ranks fourth in the nation in pressure rate. And he's kind of flown under the radar. They started him off this season because of his injuries the last 2 years, playing him limited snaps in September. October, they've ramped up his number of snaps that he's out there, and he's really come on as a pass rusher. And so if there's one guy, and it's no small thing that Michael Divinity is gone from LSU
because
he was their sack leader. Yeah. I mean, not nearly the impact that Lewis has for Alabama. LSU's got other guys, obviously, but Lewis is the one guy on the field for either defense that is capable of just making plays individually, just beating blocks, getting in the quarterback's face, and throwing everything off rhythm. And that's something that both of these teams want to try to do. You know, just make the quarterback throw before he's ready to, or hit him as he's throwing and maybe get a big play out of it. The other thing is that Alabama, for as much as people look at their defense this year and say, this isn't a normal Alabama defense, and it's not. Alabama defenses normally, under Saban, they don't bend. And it's three and out, three and out, three and out. Interception, you know, like you pick six. I mean, just whatever, but they don't give up much. They never did. This year's is a bend but don't break. And I think people have kind of failed to notice that. Their first team defense is non-garbage time, has not given up many touchdowns this year. There have been a lot of teams gotten in the red zone on them. But they are a good red zone defense. They are a great goal to go defense as far as keeping you out of the end zone. And I think that's where Alabama could have an advantage. If they can get stops inside the 20, force LSU into field goal attempts. Remember, Mississippi State was able to do that three times to LSU in the first half. So LSU is as great of an offense as they are. They're not a slam dunk when they get close to the goal line. And so those are two areas where I see Alabama maybe being able to have some success. I do expect LSU to make their field goals,
yeah,
which is more than I can say for the Tide. But that's it. I mean, it comes down to just keeping them out of the end zone however possible, and just outscore them.
I mean, curious,
it's that Big 12 mentality.
And to that Big 12 mentality, I'm curious to see how many explosive plays we will see in this game of 30 yards or more, right, on both sides.
We should see a bunch in the passing game, because look, the reality is both of these teams have excellent corners. Both of them have two very good corners. But when you're going four wide on most plays, two corners isn't going to get it done.
No, not at all.
I mean, you're going to have a third corner, a fourth corner, you know, safety, whatever, these nickel and dime backs. You got to have other guys step up. Otherwise, there are going to be a lot of big plays made in the passing game, especially by slot receivers. Alabama, we know how deadly they are on those slants. LSU defensively, they've given up some stuff on slants this year, which is one thing I've looked at. And one other thing, we're talking about X factors. Let's not forget, for all the excitement over the offenses and especially the quarterbacks, last year, with mostly the same personnel for both teams, Alabama rushed for 281 yards in Baton Rouge. So don't be shocked if everyone's thinking Tua, Tua, and LSU's defenses get pressure on Tua, make him move that ankle. If they just line up and say, all right,
where's Najee Harris?
Brian Robinson.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Harris had like 13 yards per carry against LSU last year.
And he's a great screen guy too.
That
changes things.
Yeah,
as
absolutely.
Well. Quick release.
Yeah, the way they've gotten him involved in the passing game, he's dangerous.
I can't wait. Let's just hope. I for me, in a game like this, I want everybody to be healthy so we can see everybody fully.
No Devin
up.
White
right.
suspended
no,
for the first
none of
half.
That.
That's
yeah,
good. Like we don't
just,
have that this
exactly.
Year.
Yeah. No storylines like that. And see how it plays out. Brad, thank you so much.
You got it.
Appreciate Brad and Pollock for joining us here on Friday. Also want to thank our sponsors, Allstate, AT&T, and Goodyear. Big thanks to our producer, Taylor Schwenk. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want more, all you have to do is subscribe to the College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. And, of course, to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. By the way, I want to remind everyone, we love doing this. If you have a question, you want to hear it on the podcast with Herbie on Monday, tweet using the hashtag CFBPod. The best ones will make it on Monday. I think Herbie enjoys those conversations as well. Enjoy the best weekend of the college football season.